For me to live is Christ. For me to die is gain. Every moment in between, there'll be joy and there'll be pain. I can't worry about the future or change a thing about my past. I've got this moment to believe, and I'm gonna make it last. I am filled to be emptied.
This is Pastor Michael Rogers from The Jar at 702 H Street Northeast in Ardmore, Oklahoma. Thank you for listening to our broadcast today.
God just brought this to my attention, so I'm just going to run with it. I was a teenager, senior in high school, and when I was a senior in high school, my mom got married and moved out of our town where I had been going to high school and school all my life. And I was on the basketball team, I was in theater, I was so many things that I was doing there, and it was going to be my senior year, and I didn't want to miss it. So instead of living with mom, I chose to live wherever I could. And there were, it's about 7 or 8 different places that I stayed. I found out that today the school would have considered me homeless. At the time I didn't think of it that way. I just knew that that was the only way that I could do all the things that I wanted to do. So I was always around people, but I always felt lonely. I felt like there was no home for me to be able to be in. And I remember one night, I had forgotten to make arrangements of where to stay, and I didn't know where to go. And I just was walking around town. It was after midnight, and I knew I had to be awake for the sun, so I needed to be somewhere where the sun could wake me up. And I was walking around, passed by this church. Now, for those of you who don't know me, I was not a religious kid. We never went to church, except for about 3 months when my dad was scared to death the world was going to end and Jesus was going to come back. I passed by this church, and they had a porch, and it faced where the sun would come up. And I just went there, sat down, leaned up against the wall, and thought, you're going to have to protect me, because I don't know what else to do. And I went to sleep, and I woke up with the dawn, and I gathered my bag and put it on my bike and rode to school. And that's how I went to school the next day. I can't tell you how hard it is to feel forgotten. No one wants to feel that way. But we've all had times in our lives where that's been true. We've all had times in our lives where we just feel like no one is paying attention. And we've had promises made to us that were broken. And we've had people who've promised not to forget us, and they have. Whether it's been family members or friends, or just the waiter at the restaurant who took your order and you haven't seen her in half an hour. We've all felt that feeling of, I've been forgotten. I actually experienced it this morning. Went to pick up groceries from Walmart, my wife sent me. 40 minutes later, I'm looking around and everybody who came after me has been served. And I'm like, they forgot me. No one wants to feel forgotten, whether it's a silly moment or a serious moment. Every week we ask you to consider something that gets you in the right place, the right frame of mind, so that you can really understand what it is that God is teaching, so that you can teach it to someone else. And our consider question today is, how do we navigate tough times when we feel forgotten and alone?
All right, but we're going to be in Genesis chapter 40. We're going to start there and then go into 41. When we last left Joseph, he He was serving out a sentence for a crime he didn't commit. In the dungeon for the king's prisoners, he was accused of raping his master's wife, which he never touched her, right? But yet she was relentless in trying to make him fall. And despite all of her efforts, we learned that Joseph remained strong in his faith and in his relationship with God. However, his master did not see it that way, right? And threw him into prison. And Joseph is going through a hard, he's going through a tough time. And many of us, like Michael said, have been in that same place. Some of you may be facing that right now. Some of you may not.
Yes.
For those who are facing that right now, this message is for you.
That's right.
For those who are living your best life right now and you aren't facing any trials, next week's going to be for you.
Yes.
Because
yes.
we're going to get to see Joseph and how he handles things in good times, not just in rough times.
Yes.
But this week, Joseph is forgotten, and we're going to see that.
I just want to remind you as we go into that story that we're going through the first book of the Bible right at the very beginning of the Bible because we want people to hear the foundation. But we're also thinking of little Jesus who had to memorize this whole book to be a part of what they called the Son of Commandment, the Bar Mitzvah, that he would have when he was 12. And so we saw him in the temple at 12 asking all kinds of questions. We found out it's okay to ask questions. And it's okay to learn. And so that's why we're doing this. So here's Joseph. And he's had a rough up and down life. You're talking about mountains and valleys we were talking about today. Mountains and valleys. He is the beloved son of his father's favorite wife. And he has been spoiled since he was little, but he's also been hated by his brothers for it. And they have picked on him and bullied him and kept him from being everything he wants to be until God sends him a dream, two dreams actually. One where all these wheat sheaves that are bowing to him, and there are 12 of them, and he knows that that's his brothers. His brothers are bowing to him. And then the second one is that the stars and the moon are bowing to him. And now it's even his mom and dad. And he's 17, you know how 17-year-olds are. He can't wait to tell everybody how important he's going to be. And his brothers get to the place where they don't just dislike him. They can't wait to get rid of him. They hate him. So much so that whenever he is sent to help them, they decide they're going to kill him. Until Reuben decides, maybe we shouldn't kill him. Maybe we should just throw him down in this cistern. And then Judah's like, you know, it wouldn't help us any to kill him. Let's make some money off of him. Let's sell him to those Ishmaelites. And so he goes from favored son to in a pit, to in a slavery, to Potiphar's house. And then Potiphar gives him all of the benefits that he could possibly want because he is a good manager of the household. And so he rises to this height where he is... Potiphar, only decision Potiphar makes every day is what he's going to eat. Sounds good, doesn't it, Steve?
Yeah.
Sounds like a good plan. Let's have somebody serving us so much, all we have to do is worry about what to eat that day, right? Until his wife does, like Carrie mentioned, his wife accuses him of rape, and now he's thrown into a pit again, and he's stuck in that pit. He's been highs and lows, and now here he is in this pit. But he is still staying faithful, is still staying dedicated to what God has called him to. And so just as he ran Potiphar's household, he starts running the prison. And pretty soon the warden is worried about what he's going to eat because Joseph has taken care of everything else. And in the middle of that, chapter 40 happens. And this is when Pharaoh gets upset. You know, Pharaoh is a king. Kings and sometimes are temperamental. And they get angry with their servants. And if they get really angry, they just throw them in dungeons. And two of his servants, a cupbearer and a baker, got thrown into the prison that Joseph was running for the warden. Just so happens they are in the right place at the right time because they're already miserable because they're in this terrible place and they were in such a high place before. And they're not handling it as well as Joseph, evidently, because they start having these dreams. And these specific dreams that they have are very simple. The cupbearer has a dream and the baker has a dream. They have a dream on the same night. And they wake up and they're troubled by it. Now, interestingly, Joseph is so good at running the prison that he not only knows who they are, he can tell that their demeanor has changed. There's something wrong. And so he asks, what's troubling them? And they said, well, we both had dreams last night and they really disturbed both of us and we don't know what they mean. And he said, well, I don't have any way to interpret dreams myself, but I know a God who can. Tell me your dreams and maybe God will give me the interpretation of your dreams. And so the cupbearer says, well, I dreamed there were these three branches and they made grapes and I took the grapes and made wine and I took a cup and I gave it to Pharaoh. And Joseph says, I tell you what that means. In 3 days, Pharaoh is going to remember you and he is going to bring you to his palace and he's going to reestablish you as his cupbearer. The baker's going, that was a cool dream. I like that one. Let me tell you mine too, because man, if that's a good, that's a good interpretation, maybe you have a good one for me too. So the baker says, I had a similar dream, except mine was three baskets and each basket was full of bread and I had these three baskets but things kind of ended weird. And Joseph says, well, I imagine, because what your dream means that in 3 days you also are going to be brought to the palace. But when you go there, Pharaoh's going to be upset with you. And the commentary is a little different on what this means, but he's either hung or impaled to die. Mm-hmm. And if I'm the baker, I'm like, I want the cupbearer's dream, right? So when Joseph tells the cupbearer his dream, one of the things that he says is, listen, when you get reestablished, I am not even from this land. I'm a Hebrew from another land, and I have been unfairly put in this prison. Remember me when you go into that place. And the cupbearer's like, oh yeah, I'll remember you. The baker's like, I would remember you if you'd let me, but it's terrible. Why didn't I get that dream? 3 days later happens to be Pharaoh's birthday. And Pharaoh brings those two up, and sure enough, the cupbearer is restored. And the baker is killed. If I was Joseph and I caught wind of that, I would be really excited because the cupbearer had promised to remember him. But look at chapter 41, verse 1. 2 full years later. 2 years later. Joseph has been waiting in this prison for 2 years for the cupbearer to remember him. And at this point, he has figured he probably has forgotten him altogether. And what looked like God moving to get him out of the prison has now become an empty promise and a forgotten man.
Yeah, verse 23 says, Pharaoh's chief cupbearer, however, forgot all about Joseph, never ever giving him another thought. Now imagine at the end of 39, it says the Lord was with him, Joseph, and caused everything he did to succeed. Right? So here's Joseph in his mind thinking, God has been with me. I've had his favor. All these things are happening. Surely God will remind this cupbearer that I'm here, right? Surely he'll remind him. And then I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to be free. And now here we are 2 years later, and he's completely forgotten, and the cupbearer gives him no thought. And you know, when you're going through a tough time, you'll come across situations in your life where the people who you count upon will not stand for you.
Yeah.
When promises seem forgotten, it can be hard. And I know Michael and I have experienced that in our ministry before.
Yes.
You know, people mean well.
Yeah.
And I think the cupbearer meant well too. I think he really meant what he said to Joseph and said, I'm going to remember you. I'm going to make sure you get out of here, right? I believe in you, Joseph.
Yeah.
And then he got so wrapped up in his own life and what was happening once he was released that he was just forgotten.
Yeah.
And I know we've both experienced that mm-hmm. in our ministry at times where people said, oh, we're behind you. We believe in you.
Yeah.
And then we're just forgotten, you know? Yeah. And it's one of those things where sometimes it's meant to be and sometimes it's not, right? As far
That's
as
right.
being the forgotten.
That's right.
But here's the thing. When promises seem forgotten, there's one thing that Joseph does, and that is he doesn't get bitter with the cupbearer. Okay? So when people let you down, turn it over to God without vengeance, right? Count on the Lord to handle the cupbearers in your life.
Yes.
We all have cupbearers in our life at some point. It's just part of life. It's when you're with people, that's what happens sometimes.
Yeah.
So count on the Lord to handle the cupbearers in your life. The people who take but don't give back, who forget you, who abandon you, who break their promises to you. It's God's job to deal with the cupbearers of your past. It's your job, just like Joseph, to be faithful to a God who will never forget you.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between relying on others and relying on God, isn't it?
When we
rely on God, we know he's not going to forget us. He promises he'll never leave us or forsake us. We are his child, and he is our Lord, and he's the King of Kings, and he does not forget us. So just remember, it's God's job to deal with the cupbearers of your past. It's your job, like Joseph, to be faithful to a God who will never forget you.
Yeah, yeah. I was reading a story this week about a guy who he was going through a car wash, and he could just tell these guys were working really hard, and they were just sweat pouring off of them, and everybody else was getting to stay in their air conditioner cars, but these guys were out in the heat just doing all that, and he had an extra Powerade in his car, so he got out and he took it over to one of the workers, said, "Hey man, you know, I know you guys are having a tough day, here's something to drink." He was like, "Oh, thank you, man." And so he drove away and felt pretty good about it. And about a month later, he was going to the car wash, and the guy who was working at the very big front of it was the guy that he'd given the Powerade to. He was like, he remembered him. He was like, "Man, you don't know what a blessing that was when you gave it to me that day. Today I'm going to give you a free wax. You get a free wax." And the guy was like, "It's nice to know that when you do nice things, that people remember and they do nice things back. Listen to me. That's not why you do nice things. You don't do them so that people will do them back. You do them because that's the character that you have." And that's a hard lesson for us. And so when we say God won't leave us or forsake us, that doesn't mean that God will make those people remember what we did for them in the past. What it means is that he will still bless us regardless of what those people do. But those blessings may not be what we expect. We have a God who does not meet our expectations. And he does that on purpose. Because if we felt like we could pull the right strings and get him to do whatever we wanted, then all we would be doing is pulling strings, and no longer would he be God. He would just be a puppet.
That's right. And when we're in that place of continued suffering, that was 2 years for Joseph.
Yes, 2 years.
That's when our faith is attacked the most, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, we start doubting, we get angry, we get confused, we feel lonely, we feel sorrow. And suffering, it always changes us somehow, right? And sometimes not necessarily for the better, but sometimes for the good, right? And Joseph was there in that empty middle ground going nowhere, but he clung to a single truth that kept him going. It is inferred in every word he speaks and every action he undertakes in 40 and 41, and that is he relies on God. When God's child is afflicted, God is molding and he's maturing us. When nothing seems to change, count on God's purposes without panic. Now that's hard.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's hard to do. When you're down in, here we are, here he is again. He's stuck in the pit, right? Went from up here to down here. And when we're down here, sometimes it's easy to forget and to panic and forget that God is always with us. But throughout the pages of Scripture, we see that when God's child, and that's all of you, right? When you say yes to him, when God's child is being afflicted, something is in the works for the better.
Yes.
There's an anticipation, right? They're being refined. And you know, here at the Jar, we call this place the Jar because we base it on 2 Corinthians. We carry these treasures in jars of clay. And who's the jars of clay? We are.
Yeah.
Right? We're the jars of clay. We're the ones that are being constantly molded till the day we take our last breath. Yes. Here's the thing about jars. When they're being molded and set in the fire, it's called firing. Simple, right? But that's what they call it. When I looked it up, I thought there's got to be some special magic term
some
for
art,
that. You
some
know?
Art term.
Artsy term when they stick the pot into the clay into the fire to mold it, to bring it all together, to harden it, right? And to also, sometimes they'll pull it in and they'll take it back out, reshape it, and then stick it back in again, right, into that fire. It's called firing, which is the process of heating pottery in a kiln to bring the glaze or jar, and I love this in the definition, to a maturity.
Yes.
So when the jar's being formed and it's being made and being molded, it's not done yet. It's not mature yet.
Right.
It's not until that jar is placed into that fire and everything comes together and hardens and becomes mature. And then you see the jar that's sitting on your table. Yeah. Right?
We've all been talking. We've been talking the last few weeks. God's just really been showing us, really, that God doesn't test us. He proves us. To test someone is to see if they will fail. To prove someone is to show them what their worth is. He allows us to be in situations where he can show us that we have matured. And in those situations like Joseph finds himself in, and the day in and day out of, is it going to change today? Is it going to change today? But I know whom I have believed, and I am persuaded that he will keep that which I have entrusted to him until that day. But is today the day? Is it going to change? And sometimes it feels like it never is. But hold on.
Right.
Be dedicated.
Right.
Know that he is there and he is working. And that there are situations beyond your control and outside of your experience that he's waiting on.
Right. So even though it may not feel like anything's happening right now, like nothing's ever going to change, you're either in the pit or you're in the fire, and it's painful, right? Either way, whether it's dark and damp or hot and blazing and being formed, it can be difficult. But here's the thing, circumstances are being aligned, you're being aligned, you're being refined by
good.
That ordeal, okay? You're being that's what's happening. And I love what 1 Peter 4:12 says, dear friends, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal that has come on you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. Can you imagine being a pot in that fire, in that kiln?
Yeah. Wait a minute, I didn't sign up for this.
Right? But you're being molded and you're being shaped and you're being refined. I just love that 1 Peter brings that out.
Yes.
He's firing your life. He's firing your life and designing your circumstances. Pain, probably handled, can shape your life for greatness. There is the staying power of a godly character that happens during this test. Last week we talked about how Joseph had a godly character.
Yes.
We saw that in him, and here we're seeing it again. The other part of that godly character is that he's being faithful in the little things. Why is he being faithful for the little things? Because your elevation is coming. God is getting ready to elevate you. Your elevation is coming. Luke 16:10 says, whoever can be trusted with very little can be trusted with much.
Yes.
And so you're being fired, you're being refined, and you're going to be elevated. And in a tough time, do what you can do, the best that you can do it. While Joseph was in the prison, not knowing what was in the future, he served in the prison. He was in charge of the entire affairs of the prison. He was helping people. He helped interpret the dream regarding the cupbearer and the baker. So when things are not going well with you, don't get bitter and do what you do the best. And let me tell you something right now, and I've been here, I've been in the fire, I've been fired, I've been not fired, but in the firing, right?
I'm the one that gets fired.
Yeah.
You haven't been fired.
I haven't been in fire, but I've been in the fire, and I've been in the pit. And sometimes the best that you can do is just be still before God.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't even get the words out, right? I know when I was at the lowest part of the pit, I couldn't even pray. I couldn't even get the words out, right? But the best that I could do was just put my hands up and say, God, I'm here and I need you right now. In my mind, I was thinking it, right? I just need you. I need to feel your presence. And that's the best that I can do. And as God kept refining me and as God kept healing me right through that process, then I could do better and better and better. And so he's saying, do your best. Go through that firing, go through that hard time, but do your best and don't become bitter. Don't stay there.
Yes, yes.
Let me change you. Let me refine you in who you're going to be.
And part of being a victim, part of being bitter is being a victim. And look what was done to me. And I can never get ahead because these things were done to me. And when you get to the place where that becomes a part of your identity, when you are so focused on your, on the, because it's not that you weren't a victim, it's that you've gotten so stuck with the idea of being a victim that you now don't know how to operate when you're not a victim. And so what God wants you to do is live in victory. He wants victorious living for you, not victim living for you.
He wants to elevate you out
mm-hmm. of that, but it's not going to be what you expected. Joseph is in no way near a position where he thought he was going to be when he had those first couple of dreams. It hasn't happened yet. He's had some blessings, but it hasn't happened the way that he thought it was going to happen whenever he had those dreams. And we'll talk about that some more later.
After two full years,
chapter 41, verse 1. 2 full years later, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing on the bank of the Nile River. And he has this dream. And the dream is that he has 7 really fat cows come out of the river. And then after that, 7 really lean, ugly cows come out of the river. And then the lean, ugly cows eat the fat cows.
Now, we're in Oklahoma, so we know what that looks like, right?
Yeah, right? Can you imagine? You're driving along, and all of a sudden you see these ugly cows eating the big fat cows, and you're like, wait a minute, that's my hamburger. What's going on? That's my ribs. That's my... What? You can't do that. Well, Pharaoh is so shook by it that he wakes up, and he goes back to sleep. And he has another dream, and this time, when he falls asleep, he sees 7 heads of grain on a stalk, and they're really healthy and really full, and they look really great. But then there's also these 7 parts of these grain that are like they've got crop rot. They look terrible. And all of a sudden, the rotten ones start eating the healthy ones. And Pharaoh wakes up, and it says in Scripture, he realized it was a dream. Have you ever woken up for something, and you were so sure it was real, that you had to think about it for a minute and remember where you were and who you were and what was real and what wasn't, and you went, oh, that was just a dream. And he wakes up and he can't go back to sleep. Next morning, he gathers all of his magicians and all of his wise men, and he's like, I had these dreams and they've got to mean something because, man, I couldn't even sleep after that. What can you tell me? And they're like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. And suddenly, the cupbearer goes,
verse 9, it says, finally, comma.
The king's chief cupbearer spoke up. Today I have been reminded of my failure. There's this dude I met in the jail. He was a Hebrew man, young man, good looking fella. And you remember when I was bad and you put me into prison? You got mad at me? And me and the baker came out, and I got restored, and the baker, well, we had dreams while we were there, and this young man interpreted our dreams. Pharaoh's like, let's have him. Bring him out. So he brings Joseph out, and it says in verse 14, Pharaoh sent for Joseph at once, and he was quickly brought from the prison. This tells you that Joseph, even though he was helping to lead the prison, was not getting favored treatment. It says Joseph shaved and changed his clothes so that he could go and stand in front of Pharaoh. It's not like he was living the same life he was in Potiphar's household or in his father's household. He was living the best he could live in the circumstances he was in, but he was in prison. So they shaved him and they dressed him and they brought him before Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream last night and no one here can tell me what it means, but I have heard that when you hear about a dream, you can interpret it.
Okay, now let's put ourselves in Joseph's shoes for just a moment. Pharaoh's rolled out the red carpet for him. He actually feels clean and shaven in brand new clothes, and he's brought before him, right? Yeah. And this is a golden moment for Joseph, y'all. I mean, this would be a chance for him to kind of win over Pharaoh, manipulate the situation, right, to his favor, promote himself.
Yes.
Right? And this is what happens sometimes when we're down here and all of a sudden we're elevated. This is where fear can make us desperate, right? I've got to convince Pharaoh that he needs me in this palace.
I got to get out of this place.
I can't go back there.
I can't exist another day.
I can't go back to
that pit. Spot.
Mm-mm. I need to make use of this opportunity. But what does Joseph do? He doesn't do that. All right?
Verse 16.
He says, verse 16, "It is beyond my power to do this," Joseph replied, "but God can tell you what it means and set you at ease." What does Joseph do here? He gives God the glory. He gives God the glory. So when you come out of that pit, and you've been there a long time, and now God elevates you, right? Remember, don't let fear make you desperate. Give God the glory.
That's right. That's right. I noticed something this morning. I had a mess up with the computer. So I had to take my notes and from one computer to another computer. It was a mess. And it took me like 10 minutes. And while I was doing it, I was thinking through the story. And all of a sudden, God helped something click in my head that had not clicked before. And I realized why Joseph could do this. Joseph originally had two dreams. You remember? The dreams were that his brothers were going to serve him. And then his mother and father were going to serve him as well. They were going to bow to him, right? That's not what he dreamed. He dreamed 12 sheaves of wheat and moon and stars and the sun bowing to him.
When he was 12.
So imagine now his life. He thought that had to do with his brothers and his mom and dad. But then he got sold into slavery and it couldn't possibly happen there. But they ended up in Potiphar's household. And the people there were bowing to him. The people there, now they're not important people, more like sheaves of wheat than sun and moon and stars, but not important people were bowing to him, and he was able to run a whole household for the captain of the guard for Pharaoh. And he must have wondered, is this what the dream meant? But then could it have meant that? Because then he's accused of rape and he ends up in the prison. And now he's in the prison, but he's just doing what God asks him to do. And all of a sudden, he's running the prison. And there are two important people that end up in that prison, the cupbearer and the baker. And I wonder if he thought, maybe this is the sun and moon, and the rest of the prisoners are the stars. And maybe this is what God meant when he showed me this. Because he's starting to realize that God may have given him the dream, but God has not yet given him the interpretation. He doesn't know what it means. He just knows what he's been told. So when Pharaoh comes to him and says, "Hey, I have this dream. Will you interpret it?" He's like, "Man, my track record is really poor when I have not relied on God for the interpretation. So I'm going to rely on him. What you have asked me to do is beyond my ability." That kind of humility is necessary when you are working in the mission of God. To understand who you are and who he is and not confuse the two is humility. I know whom I have believed, but I have not become who I believe. So I can't be the one to make this interpretation. I've got to be the one who listens for his voice. So what you've asked me to do, I can't do. Just like all the rest of your men. But God can. Tell me the dream and I will let you know if he gives me an answer. So the other thing we have, don't let fear make you desperate, but also don't be an opportunist.
Right.
Be so humble before the Lord.
That's right. So the dream, he interprets the dream, apparently was about 7 years of bountiful harvest, followed by 7 years of severe famine for the land. And after interpreting the dream, Joseph doesn't look for a position with Pharaoh in this moment. You'll see
that's
in
right.
verse 33, it says, "Therefore, Pharaoh should find an intelligent and wise man and put him in charge of the entire land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh should appoint supervisors of the land and let them collect one-fifth of all the crops during the 7 good years. So notice, even here, Joseph doesn't try to hedge his position
right
before Pharaoh. He doesn't offer him his resume. "Look, I worked for Potiphar. I did the X, Y, and Z in the prison." Like, he doesn't give him that. He doesn't even drop hints. There's no selfish ambition there, right? He's just saying, "Here's what God says.
Yep.
You need to find someone intelligent and wise to help you prepare." And so once again, you know, Joseph's exuding a godly character that lets the Lord have his way in his time and in his purpose.
Right.
And he believed that if God wanted this to happen, it would happen.
Yes.
Just like Michael said, it was a humility. And James chapter 4, verse 10 in the New Testament says, humble yourselves before the Lord and he will lift you up. And what's another word for lift you up?
Elevate.
Right?
Elevation.
So what happens in 39 through 44? Pharaoh says to Joseph, since God has revealed the meaning of the dreams to you, clearly no one is as intelligent or wise as you are. You will be in charge of my court, and all of my people will take orders from you. Only I, sitting on my throne, will have a rank higher than yours.
And that's really great. So he's recognizing the wisdom of Joseph, but he is also recognizing where it comes from. Right before that, look in verse 38, it says, mm-hmm. So Pharaoh asked his officials, can we find anyone else like this man so obviously filled with the Spirit of God? It's not just his wisdom. It's his connection to the higher power that causes Pharaoh to give him this position. All Joseph did was say, hey, look, Pharaoh, it's going to be 7 good years and 7 bad years. Somebody needs to do something. Here's what I would do. I would keep a fifth so that we make sure that we can feed everybody later. But Pharaoh saw in him. You remember last week we were talking about people are going to see in you what God is doing, and they're going to recognize it for what it is. Pharaoh recognizes in him what it is that is causing him to be able to interpret these dreams. And he's like, that man is spirit-led. He's spirit-filled. He has got to be the one that we rely on because he's always going to have this connection with God.
Well, and I want to point out, too, if you look at earlier, I'm not sure which verse it is, but he basically, before he asks Joseph to interpret the dream, it says in the scripture that he spoke to his magicians first.
Yes, yes.
And I find that interesting. Pharaoh didn't ask a godly man to interpret first. He asked the magicians
right.
to interpret first. And now Joseph has done that, and all of a sudden he's seeing God in Joseph.
That's right.
Isn't he? And that spirit-filled is with the capital S.
Yeah.
He's seeing God in Joseph. And what happens then is he elevates. God continues to elevate him and uses Pharaoh to do that. I mean, it says in 42, he dresses him in fine linen clothing, hung a gold chain around his neck. And then he had Joseph ride in the chariot reserved for his second in command. And wherever Joseph went, the command would shout, kneel down. So Pharaoh put Joseph in charge of all of Egypt. And Pharaoh said to him, I am Pharaoh, but no one will lift a hand or a foot in the entire land of Egypt without your approval. I mean, he didn't just take him out of the pit. He elevated him, didn't he?
Yes.
Okay, so listen. Your attitude in tough times will determine your future elevation, and how you deal with your good times will determine how you can face the next challenge of your life. And like I said, next week, we're going to look at how Joseph handles life when things are here.
Yeah, what happens when you have all that power and everything's going well for you? And now you get to confront those people that stepped on you to try to get ahead of you.
I love the Old Testament stories because we can relate so much to them. I don't know about you all, but if you feel like your life is a roller coaster of ups and downs, that is Joseph.
Yeah, that's right.
Hands down, that is Joseph. And he you can relate to Joseph's story, and we're going to continue to look at when he comes out of that pit. But our B for today is be dedicated.
Yeah.
Be dedicated. Be get dedicated to not being bitter, to relying on God, right? Be faithful in the little things when you're down below. Mm-hmm. Believe that God can. And when he elevates you out of that pit, out of that place, that pothole, that fire,
yes,
give him the glory.
I just realized this is still a story of salvation. You see, when we were born with a promise that we were made in the image of God, and that is a promise that was given to us. We had to be the image of God on earth. But over the years, things have caused us to fall into those pits over and over and over again. And there may have been times when we pulled ourselves up or when someone pulled us up out of those pits and we ended up back in them. And we got to the place where habits started to form in our world and in our lives that went against God and that kept him from being able to be close to us. And we wondered, are we ever going to be able to get out of this prison? I imagine little Jesus reading the story and thinking, this is the story of all my kids. It's the story of every one of them. And what they need to know is that there is someone who still believes in them, even in that mess. The difference in salvation is that Christ came for us. He didn't wait for us to interpret a dream or to do something important. He came for us when we had nothing to give, died for us and rose again so that we could have new life. He took the story of Joseph and he trumped it with his life. And he said, this is how much you matter to me. And so as we close, as we think about being dedicated, the reason we are so dedicated is because it's a God who, when we were forgotten and alone, never forgot us and never forsook us and kept his word. And he now does that today for all who will say yes to his son, Jesus.
And when he refines you, and he shapes you, and he molds you, and he puts you in that fire, use that for his glory to be emptied for others.
Yes.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of The Jar with Pastors Michael and Carrie Rogers. If you'd like to support our mission, you can go to www.thejarministries.net. and look for the Give button in the top right. Your sponsorship allows us to continue ministering to the least of us in our great city of Ardmore, Oklahoma. Thank you so much.
I am filled.